Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornel West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slain. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states. Working your forms, black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? You never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up. Get up, get up. Get up, get up.
Worst case scenario, might work till a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodent's still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, racing though. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland security now, there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Lost your mind, especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign. SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime, what it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent brothers not only dealing with the same drugs. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same thug heritage.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
is a continuation of last week's topic, which is Stuff Explained. 3 years ago, Dr. Lee and Dr. Cannon, her co-host, started this project as a place for us to discuss the contemporary topics of our day. Dr. Lee is the founder of the Neighborhood Commerce Commission, which is Neighborhood Commerce Institute, which is a national organization dedicated to community organizing, sponsoring the entrepreneurial spirit, and unlocking the potential within the Black community. Dr. Lee is joined by her co-host, who is Dr. James Cannon, father of entertainer Nick Cannon, and president of the Nick Cannon Foundation. Also, Dr. Cannon is the visionary behind 400 Years of African American History Commission, which is an organization that's dedicated to telling our story over the last 400 years. Dr. Cannon's passion is around unlocking the natural calling of everyday people. Dr. Lee and Dr. Cannon are joined by the panel of the usual panel of doctors, to include Dr. Anita Moncrief, Dr. Curtis Longs, and Reverend Dr. Don J. Harakti-Tynes. Without further ado, I will turn it over to Dr. Mary Lee.
Thank you so very much, Jared. Certainly appreciate you. Welcome to everyone. Welcome to everyone, and certainly appreciate you, everyone. Tonight we are, actually it's really, really hard for me tonight. I'm the type of person that I'm so transparent. I'm just completely transparent. And being broken. And over so many weeks, we got started with it, and we went for a very long time. I mean, like 10, 11, 12 episodes or so. And we talked about, you know, just this life, you know, how do we deal with brokenness and how things can happen to us, you know, throughout the years and affect us, you know, in such painful ways, in ways that we really never really overcome, and how it affects, you know, what we do from day to day, how it affects, you know, our work and business. And we talked about solutions. We've come up with quite a number of solutions, things that we're going to work on. But, you know, it's just so very, very, very real, pain and brokenness. And the situation very, very, very close colleague had lost a sister, and I certainly want to extend my condolences and prayers to the family. But in the loss, you know, it brought back so many of my own losses today. And all day, when I say all day, I mean absolutely all day, I have, you know, fought the tears, but not really. I worked over and through my own brokenness, my own pain, because the situation was just so close to my heart, situation that, you know, I feel that we're going to have to come back to and talk about, you know, in more in depth, later, you know, a few more episodes up. But, you know, we as a people, we're in such a difficult state economically, and we're going to talk about that, and we've got some wonderful guests out here tonight, but I just need to get through this right now. You know, I lost two nephews in the 90s, 97. It was a double homicide. They were 19 and 21 years old. They were at home, sleeping, sharing. They shared a house. And, some people came in at 6 a.m. in the morning, and shot and killed them while they were yet sleeping. One of the nephews, because, in our household, we fall asleep, big family. And, our cousins and would be over a lot. And we just, sleep all over the floor watching TV and that sort of thing. I had no idea I was going to go stay this tonight. But so my one nephew, he was lying on the floor, had been watching TV and fell asleep on the floor. The murderers came in through the front door, where he was laying at, shot him. He didn't even, based on investigation, he didn't even wake. He never woke up. My other nephew, who was in the back bedroom, he heard it. Of course, I can't even imagine waking up to gunshots. And he was, trying to get out. He got shot on the inside of the house. Somehow he managed to run. Certainly he was in a state of shock. He ran out of the house, down the street a little bit. They shot him again. He fell. And the person, through a witness across the street, said that and when he fell, whomever he was, stood over him and then shot him again in his temple. And they let him lie. That was at 6 a.m. in the morning. They let him lie on the street in February. It was a very cold day, February 25th. I got the call. I was about 45 minutes away. I went there. I was there in the cold all day. Of course, we couldn't get to him because of the ropes and all of that. Nearly probably froze. This incident today, it just brought back so many brokenness and pain. And first murder in our family, I was very young. I was younger. First cousin, we all were close. He was 21. He was shot in the mouth. He had come home, and he was ambushed at his front door. His siblings watched him die. Fell in one of his sister's arms. And the thing about that one was that I was on a mission. I was on a Christian mission in Montgomery, Alabama for a year. And that day, that happened the night before, I had it was like a lucid dream or vision, and of all this commotion going on, you know, I saw the streets, you know, I know family was there. It was a horrible feeling that I had, and during the vision, I was like, oh God, no, I don't want to see this. I don't want to see this, you know, in this dream. And so all that day, I was like within my spirit waiting for a phone call, waiting. That call came in at 5:03 p.m., and it was my mother. I knew that was the call. Didn't know what had happened, that my mother was all choked up. She couldn't stop crying. Thought it was my dad who was gone. But when she could get something out, you know, she called my cousin's name. Today also reminded me very, very, very much of an auntie who lost her life to alcohol. She was sick. I don't know what you call it, an alcohol abuser, but it's something else. I'm sure the medical doctors on here would know the term. But she started to drink sometimes in her teens and drank until into her 50s. She did give her life to Christ, and she stopped drinking for about 4 years or so before she died. And I remember the last time I saw her, you know, I was there sitting. We were visiting her sister and myself, and sitting with her in the hospital. And she looked at us, and she looked at her sister, and you know, her sister, the two sisters' eyes met. I never will ever forget. And she said to her, "I'm going to die, Anna." She said, "I'm going to die, Anna," to, you know, in such a sad way. Even though she had stopped the effects of alcohol, you know, all of the abuse of her body, it killed her. And then I thought about today, just everything going through my mind. You know, the death of my nephews changed our entire family. I mean, it's like every single one of us, like, lost our minds. You know, some of us recovered some of us did not. You know, and I'm thinking particularly of some of my nephews who, you know, who have turned to alcohol to survive. Dr. Tynes and the team here, you all know, a year ago, we were fighting together to save my brother. And this month, you know, just 1 year ago, and we know that we lost him to the medical system. So the day has been very, very, very difficult, you know, and it hurts. It really hurts. I don't know, I just had to say that. I appreciate you all listening. And let's remember our loved one, our colleague, and her family. you know, and the pain. It's just, and we're going to go back and we're going to talk about, we particularly want to talk about at some point a special show on recovery, you know, things that we can do. How do we get through these things? And so today's been tough. Thank you so much. We've got tonight we're going to be talking about the state of the economic state of Black America. That's what we want to talk about tonight. And we have some special guests here. We'd like for our business people that we've been talking to for the last almost week now. If you would tap 1 on your telephone, you would please, each one of you, please tap 1 on your phone. Press 1 so that we can open up your line. Okay. We don't know where you are on the board. So please tap 1 on your phones, and then your lines will be opened. In the meantime, I'm going to ask Dr. Moncrief if I want to welcome you and say who you are and just say whatever's on your heart. Dr. Moncrief.
Good evening. Thank you, Dr. Mary Lee, for sharing some of your story with us. It really touched my heart, and I can identify with some of those things, some of those losses. I'm Dr. Anita Moncrief. My background is in internal medicine and pediatrics. I'm retired, but I'm a professor at Wayne State University School of Medicine. And I'm working out of the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. I'm also the historian for the Detroit chapter of ASALA, and I'm a historian for my church, Harford Memorial Baptist Church. I draw on my family, and I draw on my God to give me strength to get through each and every day. Just like you, Dr. Nearly, I've lost some family members tragically. I've lost some too young. I've lost some to substance abuse. And I lost some to medical errors. Through it all, it's been my faith in God that has allowed me to continue and to actually become stronger from those incidents. I think about my family losses, and I think about, you know, growing up, how I didn't understand losing a family member, and the older I get, I still haven't figured it out, but the older I get, there's more of us on the other side now, or getting to that point, than on this side, and so the fear of passing on and going to the other side has left me. And it's a good place to be, to know that that everybody has to pass on, the good, the bad, the nice, the mean, the white, the black, everybody has to pass on. And so what we do in this life will determine what happens for eternity, in my opinion, and in my faith. And so I try to live the life that will allow me to be with my loved ones who have already led the way, and to live the life and to treat people the way that I want people to treat me, whether or not they treat me that way. So I hear you, Dr. Lee. I feel your pain. I feel your losses, and you are in my prayers, and I just want God to just touch you and just reassure you it's in a divine order and that his will is being done, and his will is always going to work out for the best for each and every one of us. So that's what's on my mind. That's who I am, and I'm looking forward to tonight's show. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you. Thank you so much. We do have Dominique McMillan is with us tonight. He's been with us before. And I'd like for you to come back on and introduce yourself. And we do have our other businesses on as well. So I'm going to ask you to please, all you got to do is press one on your phone. Glenn is on, Glenn Sherman. Toya, if you're on, just tap one on your phone so that we can see your number and open up your line. We are talking about the economic state of Black America. Okay, so Mr. McMillan, why don't you tell us who you are? Talk about your business. This is your business is very significant to where Neighborhood Commerce and Dr. Mary Lee Live is going. So the floor is yours. Just share however way you wish. And one thing that, you know, I would like to say, you know, before you, you know, get started, is that the economic status of Black America has not improved for a very long time. You know, despite, you know, some improvements over the past few decades, Black Americans experience far, far worse economic conditions than white Americans and the population as a whole. And I know that our economic state has a considerable, contributes considerably to where we are psychologically, and we want to talk about and address these issues, because, you know, suppressing feelings and our emotions and being introverted with what's happened or going on in the pain, it definitely affects our mental health, affects our physical health. And so we don't know where we're going tonight, as we never do, but we're just sitting around with the topic and we're talking. It's like we're sitting in the living room. Dom.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, well, first I want to say, Dr. Mary, it's always an honor and a privilege to be with you and your team and all the various entrepreneurs and people in business and doctors and lawyers, and thank God for it. Secondly, my heart and prayers definitely go out with you and you in here. 1 second. Sorry about that. My heart.
That's okay.
And my prayers definitely go out to you and your family. It's always, you know, very painful to lose a loved one, especially when it's untimely. So just want to know that I'm definitely praying for your strength. My name is Dominique McMillan. I am the co-owner of Live Waves app. Live Waves is a tech company, and that we help people who have content stream on their content on our platform. So we help them control their content on their contract. On their content. Also, we help them monetize their content as they see fit for their discretion. And so the goal was to curate ownership in the tech world, which is very, scarce, so to speak. So we're doing pretty good. Thank God for the company. Thank God for the vision. Our goal is to help, many people across the nation, with their gifts and their talents and their craft. It's very important for African Americans to see, young black people doing things in business. So that way, we could be their example. We could be their bridge and say, hey, listen, I come from some of the same, neighborhoods and the same, impoverished, upbringings and so on and so forth. And, having the strength and the perseverance to make it out. And just regarding, the state of black economics, I definitely agree that it hasn't changed much. I think the caveat is this lack of information. In this world, you're either uninformed or you're informed. Either you don't know or you do know. And so in that, my goal is to show people, teach people, lead people as best as I can with the help of God, just to expose them to information that people along the way, in my story, my journey, have been so kind of to show me, to introduce me, to teach me. And so I'm just playing the forward. I was reading the book. The name of the book is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And it was written by an author named Robert Kiyosaki. And he said that the American educational system is derived from a Persian slave system. And that's not to, to attack education or, downplay it. It's just very important, to be educated. But in America, they teach that education is only, one way, one form. Personally, I learned more after college than I learned in college, And so in that, I believe, information of different types, different forms is key to changing the state of black economics. So that's my take on it. I believe that the more that we understand, the more that we know, the more that we seek God, it's certain information, certain knowledge that only God can show you, through trial or through error, through revelation. The Bible says that a wise man looks well into his knowing. And sometimes, God has to be the one that leads that path for you to unlock certain mysteries and, or find the right people, right? Many things that I've gained over the past 5 or 6 years, I got through, meeting people like yourself and people like Michael Dorsey and, Andreas and it goes on and on. And so in that, they saw enough value in me, said, hey, I see the value in you. I see how you can help me. Let's take it. Let's break it together, and let's build something great. Let's build legacies. Let's build foundations. Let's make it happen. Let's take the world by storm. And so I believe, networking, unity, information, humility, prayer, understanding, wisdom. Those are all principles, or cornerstones. To achieve wealth or to build legacies. And that, when you you know, do it at a high level, then your job is to play it forward and give it back. Give it back and make it be, you know, intentional, you know. You know, be serious about it, you know. Be conscious and aware of what you're doing and how you're doing it. So that's my take on it. I don't want to talk much tonight. I know I think I have Alexa. We have Alexis. And I think Glenn is on the line. So, you know, Dr. Mary, they were honored to, you know, to meet you a few days ago. So that's all I got for tonight.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's a lot. Thank you. Thank you so very much, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I recommend that book to any and everyone. It's a great book. It's a really good book. And but if you can pick it up somewhere, you know, I certainly do recommend it. And you're absolutely, you know, right and on point that we must be intentional and serious, you know, about it. You know, we have to be, because they're not willing to change the educational system, and we're operate, you know, at a very disadvantage because we do not have, as a people, access to information and tools as they do. I mean, they're pretty much, you know, running the country, and they have other ways, you know, outside of school. But then some of them do have and teach economics and in a way that it exists now. You know, they teach them and do certain things, and sometimes they'll do it right under your nose. In the same schools, you know, via various different types of clubs and organizations. I've been in school, and I remember the junior achievement, you know, business clubs, and I knew it had something to do with business, but they would never ever give us the information. It was always white. It was always all white in junior achievement, and it was an economic business type of development club, just like, you know, your other, you know, extracurricular activities. And it was there, and I knew they were doing something with business, but they kept it away from us blacks. So the struggle is absolutely real. The black community, you know, in the report or study for 2022, you know, still states that we lag behind all other racial and ethnic groups in wealth. We face ongoing disparities in income across levels of educational attainment and struggle to save for retirement and childcare. At the same time that we're struggling and we're still behind, we've had a marked progress in college and high school completion and race and union pension, but we're still behind. You know, the challenges remain there for us. And it's important for us, and we're doing it right now, to come together collaboratively, work together, pool our own resources. This is what Neighborhood Commerce is established to do. You know, we want to build and fully participate in an economy. We want it and more inclusive, but we have to face the facts, and the facts and the truth, and the facts and the truths are that they are never ever going to be fair to us. They are never ever going to be include us at a level where we can benefit, that where we can become equal. It's not going to happen. We have to do it ourselves. And, you know, many of us across the country are creating tools and ways and means for building our own businesses. So I think we'll go to, so we have Glenna, we have Alexis on, everybody who has tapped one on your phones, your lines are open. And so I don't know which one of you are which, but Glenn, why don't you start talking? Tell us who you are. Are you there? How about Alexis? Okay, how about whose phone number is 318 and it ends in 1242?
Yeah, that's my number. That's Dominique.
Oh, okay. So who is 313 ends in 6363? Three, one, three, and your last four digits in your phone number is 6363.
That's me, Toya. Hey, sorry about that. I was trying to get off mute. That's me, Toya. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we
Hello?
Can hear you. Okay, hi.
Yeah, so,
yeah, we can hear you. So tell us who you are and tell us about your business. And also would like to know, you know, challenges that you face, you know, where you come from, who are you?
Okay. I see. Okay, so I'm Latoya Johnson. I own Toya's Cheesecakes and owner of Toya's Cheesecake Foundation, which is a charity I'm starting to give back to Black women and Black children and help the less fortunate. So about 40 years old, a little bit about myself, I'm an engineer. Went to school at Wayne State University. I'm oldest of six. I come from a long line of entrepreneurs on my dad's side. And my mom's side, I come from a long line of very talented cooks. And so I took those two skills that I learned from both families and formed Toya's Cheesecakes. I was raised in a very pro-Black family. Both of my parents are very pro-Black, very generous people, and that we help a lot of people. My dad made it a point to only employ Black people and only rent and lease to Black people. That was his heart of making sure Blacks are raising to another level, help, and putting back into the community. My father is Joe Little Asphalt. I have uncles that own IT firms. And my sisters are all entrepreneurs also. So I'm oldest of six, and my sisters are entrepreneurs also. So this is something that's in our blood as far as Black leadership and Black economics. Investing in yourself, investing in your children, investing in your family is something that I was born and raised with. One of the reasons I started Toya's Cheesecakes Foundation is because it was at times where I lost everything and I had to start over from ground zero. And they were the generosity of strangers that helped me keep going and helped me get to the next level and invested in me. So it was my way of giving back and showing that I can use God to invest in my business and also use God to help people with my business also. Some of the challenges I faced, I've been through situations where I faced racism, sexism, sexual harassment, being a Black woman. All those things that we've all had to deal, I've had to deal with through my career, even in a professional career. So it's really hard and tough for a Black businesswoman to actually find good, honest people with good characters and integrity to work with. And even to this day, it's still a problem. It's still an issue. But how I combat it is I stay positive. I keep moving forward. Never let anybody stop me. Never let anybody get in my way. Always looking at ways to grow and try to help people, especially my people. Things that I want to produce is I would like to open a group home for women and children. Also, maybe open group forum for the LGBTQT community, because a lot of those black people of color that are in those groups are affected economically because it's hard for them to find jobs. A lot of them are kicked out by their families, and they have nowhere to go. So a lot of my profits from Toys Cheesecakes Foundation to not only supports black women and children, but supports also other groups also. Also, some things I would like to get for less fortunate people, housing, not only housing, shower stations, food drives, and educational programs to help people that's transitioning out of foster care into the real world. It's a lot of people that didn't have a good upbringing. They might have had not come from a two-parent household, or might not have people to invest in them like my family invested in me. So some of those skills I would like to show and teach younger generations about, let's say marketing skills. I would like to teach maybe etiquette classes, maybe fine. I'm not an expert in it, but I think there's some of the things that are left out when it's time for the people to transition into adulthood that they don't know. And so I think that's what my foundation come in to teach people the skills that I was taught that invested in me to make me the person I am today. And that's all I have.
Okay, well, that's definitely a lot. And, we're here, to support all of your efforts. And we certainly appreciate you sharing. So are you open? Have you physically opened, your business? How are you working it right now?
Right now I have a little temporary location. It's not an official location I sell out of. I have Uber, DoorDash, and Grubhub. It's in the Detroit area off 7 Mile and Evergreen. So right now I'm in the process of working to open up Toya's Cheesecakes. So right now I'm looking for grants and funding and find the best route to go to open up Toya's Cheesecakes. So my first location, I would like to have like a bakery. And eventually my dream location will be a half brunch location where I can serve brunch all day and a half bakery. So it can maybe turn into a nightclub at nighttime and people get desserts all hours of the night. Maybe like an outdoor patio space. So I'm actually visioning and manifesting my dream location as we speak right now. So I'm just happy and grateful that the process is about to get started and my dream is actually about to come true. And one of the things I was internally grateful for is that my grandmother, so my mom's side of family, we don't have any business owners. So I'm the first business owner and the first college grad on my mom's side of family. So things I'm doing now is something that my family could never even think of imagining doing. And didn't even think something like this was possible. To a lot of black people, the only way you get rich is you either hit the lottery or you win a lawsuit or something, And that's not to talk about anybody, but that's how a lot of my family thinks on my mom's side of the family. So for me to actually step out the box and not have a baby out of college or not out of high school and start a business and graduate, that's actually a big deal. So one of my proudest moments is the fact that my grandmother, who actually lived long enough to where she actually picked cotton down in Mississippi, to see her granddaughter not only finish college, but to see her start a business and develop a reputation as a great businesswoman, not only a great businesswoman, but the best cheesecake maker in the city of Michigan. That's actually been my biggest accomplishment, seeing my grandmother's face and her excitement, knowing that I'm basically living my ancestors' wildest dreams. And so I'm very grateful for it.
Yes, that is. That's awesome. That's great. We want to, I really don't know what's going on with the numbers, but get the last four digits 0206, air code 313. Who's
yes, that's,
line
that's,
is that?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello?
Okay,
yes,
we can hear you.
Yes, this is Glenn Sherman. I was having a problem with my mute button. Hello, how's everybody doing this evening?
We're doing very well. Thank you, Glenn, for for joining us tonight. Please share with us who you are and what you have going on, some of your challenges, and where you what your ultimate vision and goal is.
Okay, my name is Glenn E. Sherman, owner and operator of Edifice Development. I'm a licensed general contractor. Where I start off at is when I was in high school, I did a vocational school at Randolph Vocational School in my 11th to 12th grade year. 11th grade started with the 11th grade. Didn't know exactly where it was going to go. I did a summer working during the summer at Elias Brothers. It's over there on Jefferson and the Boulevard. And I worked there for maybe about a month or 2 months. And I was busting dishes. And I saw how that went. And it wasn't definitely thrilling at all. They wanted you to come in on your off days, close, open, things of that nature. And after dealing with that experience, as far as in the restaurant business, which gave me a greater respect for those that work in that field, once I got to my 12th grade year, I went ahead and jumped head on into my carpentry classes and was able to get in with the city of Detroit at the age of 17 as an internship and stayed on with them, started off with $3.35 an hour, working with them in the afternoon for four hours a day, 4 days a week. And then after I graduated high school, was with them full time, doing 40 hours a week, and did the carpenter apprenticeship through Detroit Carpenter School, which is off Farrell Road off of 9 Mile. Which is basically a collaboration of all of the different contractors that send their students there, and was able to get into the apprenticeship there and work with local, time was local 114, which was on Gratiot. And from there, local 687, and just did the internship, got the apprenticeship, graduated from there in December of 91. 92, became a journeyman carpenter, worked there with the city of Detroit from the age of 17 all the way until I retired in 2016, of December of 2016, with 29 years with the city. And I retired as a carpenter foreman. So I was an intern, then I became an apprentice, then I became the carpenter foreman, then retired as a carpenter foreman. So 29 years with the city of Detroit, retiree, collecting the pension. And but I acquired my my general contractor's license through the state of Michigan in 2002, and was working with the city and doing work on the side afterwards with my business. And then after I retired, just was doing classes as far as getting my lead license, asbestos license, and everything, doing things as far as renovations, remodels, things of that nature, on my own. So that's what I'm doing now, doing demolitions, things of that nature. And what I did was back in maybe about 4 years ago, I was going to one of my vendors to get some materials. And what I saw was a homeless person. It was a detour. It was DT was doing work on the street. I detoured around that to get to the vendor, which is Granger, and looked to the left, and I saw someone laying on the ground, sleeping in the snow, and snow's covering them, which was a homeless person, and that pricked my soul there. And from that point, I made it my mission to get my nonprofit, which I have right now, which is GESH, is Glenn Edmund Sherman Housing, and My mission with that is to provide housing for veterans and less fortunate individuals that need the need housing, because here in the state of Michigan, it's the worst place to be homeless or without shelter. So ever since then, that's been my thing, working with that along with my being the general contractor, and just trying to see what could be done, what I need to do. And my father was a did two tours in Vietnam, so on my father's side, I come from a line of veterans. My father, my oldest brother, two of my sisters, two of my brothers, a stepbrother, stepsister, cousins. And so that's been my passion, along with knowing some of the other people that work at the VA, and jumping into that to try to see what I can do as far as housing, mm-hmm. because it's definitely something that is needed for those people that are less fortunate, and veterans that I see all the time that's on the street. And that kind of pricks my soul. It does something to me. So I stay vigilant with that, and try to stay energized with that as well. So pretty much that's been my drive, along with me being in the business as far as doing carpentry for the past 35 years.
Wow, this is amazing. You know, this here just proves, you know, my point, our point, you know, all of our panel, our co-host point, that, you know, we are talented, we're gifted, and we have the skills and the ability, from technology to management to building to you name it, to the food. We have the ability, you know, as a people to change our position. And that's what we're doing right now. I'm just pleased and so happy that you shared this. And I'm not going to be the only one asking questions. We all share in this conversation. But, you know, you've had so much, and you said so much that, you know, it's phenomenal what we can do, you know, once we are all together and we come together. And so I'd like to know, what or who was your greatest inspiration? And I know some more of you business people are on here. I'd like to say to our funding lead, to the funding lead colleagues who are on, is that that Glenn Sherman is our newest celebrity host. And so we want to welcome you and thank you for being a part of us. In fact, you know, everyone, all of our guests tonight, either they're new, already registered, or they're in the process of. And we're going to ask, you know, someone in just a little bit to, you know, to explain what the Funding League is. So thank you. Thank you so much. How did you, what gave you the tenacity and that inspiration to just go on, Glenn, to where you are today and just not, you know, give up with your dream and your passion?
What gave me the tenacity and to not give up is the God-given talent that God gave me. It's I read in the scripture said that you are blessed with wisdom, and you're blessed with gifts. So the definition of wisdom, the way it's depicted in the Bible, is the gift or the talent that God gives you. He gives you the wisdom to do this, or the wisdom to do that, or the wisdom to build this, or the wisdom to build that. And that right there was my drive to do what I'm doing, knowing that he did bless me with the wisdom to do what I'm doing as far as being mechanically inclined. And I have an Uncle Henry Sherman, which we had share the same last name there in Valdosta, Georgia, in which he's a carpenter. He's like, my uncle's like 87 years old. He's touching on 90s door, and he's a carpenter. He got me going when I was the age of five, I want to say. And that's what inspired me and made me want to look into it further. And then his younger sister, which is my mother, she has mechanical aptitude as well, and pretty much following, you know, with that bloodline as far as doing the mechanical work. And to keep me going is just to see the outcome of whatever it is that that's in my head, to put it in my hands to make whatever it is. And a lot of people wonder where I get it from, and a lot of it is in my head because I breathe it, I sleep it, it's in my, you know, while I'm sleeping, mm-hmm. or even if I just see something and I write it out just to be able to write it out and to breathe life into it. I've told somebody before that I said, I'm an architect and an engineer without a degree. and I'm able to build whatever it is that that I draw or engineer, and, you know, just to be able to build it. So just to keep going, and I love it. You know, a lot of times if you do something, and a lot of people that you have to love what it is that you're doing, because if you don't love what it is that you're doing and you don't get a joy out of it, then you're not going to be in it long. If you're in it just for the money, then you're not going to last long.
Okay, so, you know, you say, it's kind of funny, you say that you're an engineer and so forth without a degree, but, you know, that made me think about my son, who's a lawyer, when, after he got through law school, and he was searching, you know, for work, and you know, he wanted a mentor. He wanted to get with a law firm and be mentored and taught how to practice law. Being a young black man, that was a huge challenge. It never did happen. And so, you know, one day I said to him, "Okay, I mean, like, why don't you, you know, so you open up your own law firm." He's like, now he's gotten his degree, he's passed the bar, all of it. He says, I don't know anything about practicing law. So you don't learn in school. Do you see what I'm saying?
Right.
You don't learn in school.
Yes.
He said, I don't know what I'm doing, you know? Like, he didn't never know. Even though you go there and you get the book knowledge, but you learn on the job.
Yes.
You learn being out there. You educate yourself. And so I saw Dr. Tynes while you were speaking. I don't know if he's still on or not. So perhaps he'll come back. But thank you so much. We do want to open the floor up to more, you know, anyone else who has questions. And we're going to get around to these hands. You are live. Your last four digits are 2766. Say who you are and tell us about your business or ask a question or of any one of the speakers so far.
Well, Dr. Lee, this is Michael Dorsey. I apologize for coming on late, but the church services that I was in lasted a little bit longer than thought.
That's fine. No problem at all. Thank you, Michael, for joining us again. Michael has been here. I'll let you go ahead and share what you do, who you are and what you do.
Well, thank you. Again, my name is Michael Dorsey, and I am the Chief Operations Officer of this great company, an app called Live Waves. Live Waves is a black-owned and black-ran social network on an event platform. That's now given the
Yes. Okay. Apparently, Dr. Tynes, I don't know what happened, but I do want to let him say hello. He worked all day and probably just get out of his office. So we want to hear your voice, Dr. Times, and then you'll give it back to Michael. I don't know how much you heard tonight.
I heard just a little bit, and then about the message earlier. I don't know if I
can
address. So no, all I heard was I'm just talking about you have some tenacity. He gave the family background. This young man was talking about his company, and then you know, had a law. Has that issue been addressed? About the law, since the law of one.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Michael, you can go ahead. Thank you.
Oh, no worries. Just informing the audience and the participants on the call that we're excited about working with the Funding League and Dr. Lee and all of the individuals looking to change the dynamic and the narrative of Black America and anyone that's been taken advantage of in regards to access to wealth, access to information, and being able to get truth however they need to disseminate it. Thank you for this platform, Dr. Lee.
Explain how you're welcome. Explain how Live Waves. I mean, we're all business people and entrepreneurs on here, and we have to promote our businesses. Can you explain how? And I want everyone to know that this service is available to all of our Neighborhood Commerce team and the Funding League. And it's an absolute phenomenal what they do, and it actually fulfills a vision for Neighborhood Commerce, which I had like about 15 years ago. I've been planning this. First time I run into anyone Black who knows what I'm talking, or they actually share it with me what they do, and I'm like, oh my God. This is exactly what I dreamt, or how I dreamt Neighborhood Commerce to be represented and get known. So would you explain how LiveWave can help any business down here to, like, grow?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. So us being a social network platform, that's free. Any business can now promote and advertise their business without any cost. They can do so through commercials. They can do so through video. They can do so through intellectual content that they can provide with either video or audio, live streaming, or pre-recorded content. We also have an opportunity for them to create fundraisers with no upfront cost because we have the ability to have them have live streaming content and receive cash, donations, or tips right through a live stream. We are looking to be a voice to provide opportunity for businesses to be in front of a demographic looking for them because they promote equity, they promote entrepreneurship, they promote free enterprise, and they promote success.
That's great. And you're in partnership with whom?
Well, I have two amazing Black men that founded this company. One is our CBO, Andreas Parsley, who lives in Charlotte, North Carolina. The other, Jason Wright, who lives in Indiana. And we formed a collective of individuals that we formed a company that we're now growing at a great clip to be viable options and really compete with the likes of Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Netflix, all those guys.
Mm-hmm. What's been your biggest challenge? I mean, you know, in getting to where you are, you know, formulating this, it's highly, I mean, competitive. This is something that blacks are really, really not in, you know, we're not there yet. I mean, we are with what you're doing. The potential is there for us to be as large as anyone, and that's what I'm so excited about, the fact that you're going to take neighborhood commerce, you know, with all of our tools, the Bunny Lead, et cetera, to a higher height and all of our projects. We've got a lot of projects going, so I'm very excited about that. So,
Dr. Lee, I believe my greatest challenge as of today was, I would liken that to, let's say you got a big ball of clay and you set it down in front of a person, and that person not knowing what to do with the lump of clay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you set that lump of clay in front of the right person, they can envision whatever they want that lump of clay to be, and they will either form it or get someone to take their idea and form it for them. So we liken our app to that lump of clay that you can place in front of any content creator or person. This tool, they can now use it to form it and use it any way they want to or can. They just need to either have the vision or have someone near them that can create vision for them.
Mm-hmm. And then you can implement that vision, you know, with your product.
Yes.
Okay, that's very important, and you know, for everyone to know that it's just a matter of you knowing what you want to do and how, you know, they can, you know, through their system, you know, make it happen. For example, this show that we're doing right now, we have been censored, even though just a few weeks ago we made the front page and you know, on their system, so we were featured. But we do have challenging topics here, and so the live waves, they will be able to broadcast us and encrypt our programs so that we're free to talk about whatever we want to talk about. And while we're speaking to the media right now, you know, we are now the Neighborhood Commerce Institute and the Dr. Mary Lee Live. All of our shows have been uploaded now, so you can go to YouTube and we're there. But interestingly enough, while the person was helping to build and put our shows on, we got I forget what she called it, but we got a warning, we got two warnings, and then we got a thing that but this particular show was against their regulations and that we weren't in compliance. And guess what? Those shows were about the COVID-19 programs that we had. They won't even so they wouldn't allow, you know, a certain topic. And so we've got to kind of like outsmart them or attempt to anyway. So we were so with this censoring, we got a strike. I don't know how many strikes you get before they shut us down, but before we even get up good, we're getting these strikes, and we're not able to post for 7 days. So, you know, they've got, you know, all these different things in place because there are certain topics that they don't want. And it was interesting enough. I mean, they allow most of them, but this particular one, it was about treatment. You know, it was about treatment, you know, self-care for COVID-19. And so we plan to, we're going to get that show up there. You know, we may just have to change the name or something to that effect, but we're definitely going to get that show on. And so I just want everyone to know we can go with LiveWays. We will be free. And to talk about, you know, on radio as well as live TV, you know, what we would like to talk about without being censored. I do want to thank you. So error code 703, your last four digits are 8523. You're live. 703, your last four digits are 8523.
Hey, Dr. Mary Lee, it is Steve Williams, National Juneteenth Observance Foundation. How are you doing?
Doing very well. How are you doing, Steve?
Very good, very good. I was just chiming in. I got your invite. I was in another meeting, and I wasn't expecting to get on right now. But
oh, okay. Well, we certainly appreciate you joining us. Why don't you share, you know, you're on now. Why don't you share your what's going on, the latest project with Juneteenth, and who you are in relation to Juneteenth?
Well, okay, yeah. Well, my name is Steve Williams. I'm the president of the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation. You have seen me and Opal Lee out front in making Juneteenth a national holiday. We have been working in the foundation founded by Dr. Ronald B. Myers, Sr., M.D., in 1997, we've been advocating for Juneteenth to be a national holiday. We achieved that in 2021 through some lobbying and working with Congress to get that particular image done. Juneteenth, right now, we are working on awareness of it around the country and education. As a matter of fact, on Wednesday nights, we have an education committee that is developing an online class to bring people to awareness and understanding about the complete history of Juneteenth. And that's our goal. We have several irons in the fire that we are working year-round. Coming up, the National Miss Juneteenth Scholarship Program and our annual meeting. But the major thing that we have right now is that some of our people are working with film producers in Itabena, Mississippi, in LaFleur County, Mississippi. And one of them stumbled upon a warrant for the arrest of one Carolyn Bryant, the woman who accused Emmett Till of assaulting a woman in the store. And it was taken and closely observed, and it was presented to the state treasurer's office and attorney general, and they validated that the warrant was legitimate and it was real. It was 67 years old. You got to think about that for a second. They've known for 67 years that this woman has lied about what took place. They knew right away, and they issued a warrant for her arrest, but they hid it downstairs in the basement of the courthouse.
And you guys found that?
Yes. Our Juneteenth people found that. And so now we are working closely with several people, their lawyer, the Till family. We're down in Mississippi. This is where Doc Myers was at. He was there in Itabena. He's there in Chula, Mississippi, the poorest places in America outside of the Indian reservations, right? And this is where he worked at. This is where we do a lot of work at. So right now we're asking people to go to Justice, the word Justice, the number 4, Emmett, EMMETT.com, and sign the petition. You need to sign the petition to urge the LaFleur County District Attorney to press charges and execute the warrant for Carolyn Bryant. Okay? We're getting people on the ground there to get the local residents, to get the number up there, but we need the whole nation to jump in because this is
the one epitome of atrocities. This just goes to show you what the battle was and why Juneteenth is so important. Mm-hmm. The acknowledgement of the end of what's going on and our exercising of freedom, which is liberty. And the securing the blessings of liberty is that, and that's life and limb. And so if they can prosecute somebody or bring them up for things that happened, you know, many years ago, this is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. So, yes, our people founded justiceforemmett.com, E-M-M-E-T-T. And, it was there. I'm not going to go into the exact names of Juneteenth people, and they're with our committee, they're with our movement. They've been helping us for years. And they were working with the producers down there. They found this particular piece of stuff in the bottom, in the basement of the mm-hmm. courthouse. They're digging through old cans going back 50, 100 years ago. And they stumbled upon this thing. If it wasn't for God, and they saw it, and they immediately secured, did the right things, got it secured, watched multiple people with it, got it to the Mississippi Attorney General, who validated and said it is true. So there is no statute of limitations on murder or execution of a warrant mm-hmm. for murder, okay? So there's no statute of limitations on that. But because of where we're at and what we're doing, we've got to get people behind there with the petition to say, hey, go execute this, extradite this woman from North Carolina, and get her back to Mississippi, okay? That's our latest thing that we're pushing right now, besides education, but that's where we're at. So we want people to go there to sign the petition, stay in touch with what's going on by staying on the petition page, justiceforemmett.com, and people like the local organizing okay. committee and other groups down there, the New Black Panther Party, are working with the National Juneteenth to bring this to push. So go to change.org through our justiceforemmett.com website and please sign the petition. This is something that is, you know, I was just flabbergasted just to say kindly when I realized that this piece of document had been sitting in there for 67 years. They've known for 67 years. And still they don't want to
move.
So we need people to sign.
And see, this is just typical of how much they do not care about us. So Justice, J-U-S-T-I-C-E, the number 4, Emmett.com, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, everybody. Please follow through with, I think we're going to ask Dr. Tynes for any responses right now. And all the lines are open where the hands are up. So if I haven't gotten to you, just speak out if you haven't spoken yet, okay, Dr. Tynes.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Lee. So what the young man was saying is very important. The whole reparation movement started with the reparations Ray and Claude Anderson, reparation Ray out of Detroit, and then Claude Anderson out of Maryland. And reparations actually started much, much earlier. Just this week in the Supreme Court, headed to the Supreme Court, one of the lower-level judges was trying to block the movement forward of the 1866 Indian Treaty that Dr. Claude Anderson has been financing out of his own funds, which says that the 5 civilized tribes, the ones who gave up being independent and became European Indian tribes, those individuals owe reparations because the second leading cause of death of a slave was being killed by what we call the American Indians, who were slave owners, but they were also the people who did the bounty hunting for the whites. The third main source of death for Africans was white women. It would beat them to death, you know, sleep them and beat them to try to hide their innocence. And as a result, they had to create the Casual Killing Act of 1710 to protect white women from destroying property. In other words, because we're still not human beings. So the whole reparations that Dr. Anderson brought up in this young man now is helping to continue that effort. Was one to bring about the awareness that all the way up until after the Reconstruction period, we always identified ourselves as African. The first African Episcopal Church, the first African Baptist Church, the first African Methodist Church, before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave, and et cetera, that it was after the multiple slave rebellions that the need to break up the whole identity were being unified behind African, that you'll see new names were created for us. And then you see the effort for whites to no longer call themselves by their European tribe names, but to use the word white to try to unify. And we have to actually break that up and start calling them European Americans, whether Italian Americans, French Americans, German Americans, breaking that power base up. But we need to collectively know that the African saw himself as an African, and that even though in 1863 was the Emancipation Proclamation, and it freed the Africans that were under Confederate control but not Northern Union control, that the Africans basically freed themselves. Once the Africans of the South knew that they were free, coming all the way from Texas and Mexico, they pushed that movement all the way up into the North. So it wasn't the good heartedness of the North that did that. We brought that about. And that is something that we must continue to do.
We must keep pushing forward.
Yeah, we have to keep pushing forward. So the thing about, we also, Bill Cosby went to prison because he was trying to create a network, a media network from East Coast all the way to the West Coast that was black owned, because a lot of the companies are still underneath whites who can shut them down because they have to piggyback off a white platform. And we have to find ways to create the black platform that we can't be shut down. That's what Bill Cosby went to prison for. And the people lied because that was the issue. They attempted to take out Bill Cosby when him, Michael Jordan, and Magic Johnson tried to take over Coca-Cola. And they killed Jordan's dad and Bill Cosby's son. And all of a sudden, Magic came down with, you know, AIDS and had to leave the NBA. You know, he's still around today, the longest living patient ever. And so there are these pressures to make sure that we do not run our own businesses, that we don't have our own form of communications, because in war, the first thing you have to do is control communication. That's why when it comes to Ukraine, you can only know what they tell you. That's why when it came to the wars in Uganda, the wars in Kenya, with the Mau Mau, or with police from Lumumba, with Julius Nyerere, we didn't know what was going on except what racist white media tells you. Remember, the media is to control whiteness and protect whiteness, and it's not to our advantage. And so this young brother who's here, Emancipation Proclamation, the other thing that ties directly to that is that we finally, what was being pushed, and I don't know if you knew, we were pushing to have the Constitution changed so that the African would be considered a full human being instead of property, a chattel, three-fifths human. And the compromise was that instead of addressing and dealing with that issue, it was better to deal with the issue of giving a holiday of Juneteenth versus then changing the Constitution and giving us full rights, human rights, as Malcolm X is fighting for as a human being. So I think we have to still put that agenda back on there, that we become full human beings. We also have to go after the 13th Amendment that says that if you go to prison, you are still reclassified now legally as a slave. So we have to fix some of those problems still. And the thing about Juneteenth, we have to make sure that Juneteenth was a time of freedom and reflecting back on culture. So that's why we have some cultural that still comes from Africa with us today, because people wanted to celebrate it. And a lot of people who don't know Juneteenth why it's so important, they make it a white holiday, and they don't even know anything about it. There are no African drums. There's no libation, those things. So we do have to educate the people. So education to lead to freedom, and that we have to continue to know that we're not winning. We're behind. Dr. Claude Anderson showed that in 1960 that we only had 103 politicians in the whole United States. And then in 1990, when we look back, we had over 9,000 people in politics throughout the whole United States, and all of our conditions have gotten worse. Our housing has gotten worse. Our job status has gotten worse. We have not even moved from the Emancipation Proclamation of 1.5%. We still only own 1.5% in the United States, and our crime index got worse. Everything has gotten worse, even though we have black people in office. So it's not the black face, is the mind that pushes the black face to the pro-Emancipation Proclamation. The thing that we have to do, and I'm going to tell this young brother and all brother there, that we have to have the mindset from here on out that we are unapologetically black. Hear me. We are unapologetically black. We're unapologetically black. We're unapologetically African. We're unapologetically African. We're unapologetically African, and we're unshamefully pro-black, and we're unshamefully pro-black, and we're unshamefully pro-black. That's the only way we're going to get back to being world leaders that did the Mali Empire, the Egyptian Empire, the Nubian Empire, the Songhai Empire, the Monongatapa Empire. The only way we can get back to our seat is that we unify behind our blackness and our Africanness, and that the African woman returns back to being an African queen and not an adversary, because the white man has pulled her out and made her an adversary to the black race. But she is the key to restoring the black race. She is the adversary, and when she again gets the mindset of protecting and uplifting the African family, the black family, then we are going to move together as a people. Right now she's looking out for everybody else but us. So unity through Juneteenth, unity through our own lines of communication, unity through our own forms of education. Malcolm X said, only a fool will allow his enemy to educate his children. So we have to make sure we have educational programs after school to deprogram our children for freedom. So Chamber of Commerce is economic freedom. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Steve, would you want to respond? Do you have anything more you'd like to say?
I've talked with the doctor before, and I've challenged him on several things. Juneteenth is partly what he said is true. It was instituted by the contraband camps. So everything that came about was by black men. Three black men escaped from the slave masters and crossed the land at Fort Monroe, Virginia, and they requested asylum. So there is an institution behind that. The United States colored troops were brought into that. Constitutional law is a different thing. And I've asked them to challenge them to go through and identify Negro or African words throughout the Constitution. Neither one of them are there. As Frederick Douglass said, is the tool to be welded for freedom. His understanding of Juneteenth is completely wrong. It was not a give, it was a push. And there was much complaining by many politicians that the political process that I used to get Juneteenth through was not what they wanted. I used every single trick and process that was there, using a lot of time on Capitol Hill to twist arms and to beat up people. Politicians who, when you saw Oprah Lee walking somewhere, that was the 1-2-3 punch of getting that politician to come to understand. Black, white, it didn't care what color they were. They all had their own political reasons for not wanting to use Juneteenth. It was a football. Barack Obama didn't get started until he picked up the Juneteenth flag and marched with Dr. Myers and Lucien Bowers in Chicago and set his office up across the street from it. I sat there in Senator Obama's office with Dr. Robert Starling Pritchard, the founder of Black History Month, right? The contra pianist who stood up to racism in Michigan, who believed and understood the message of, unifying message of Juneteenth, and listened to Obama tell us he was going to make it a national holiday. It didn't happen, okay, because it was to their advantage to do certain things. This particular institution of this bill was called a zero legislation bill, right? And that's because after we got legislation passed, the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation got legislation passed in 46 states in America, right? We had senators and congressmen backed up. But we also knew that the objections from the House of Representatives and the staff there were huge. We ran into them, and we had a team of some of the best black legislators, including remarkable people like Senator Connie Johnson out of Oklahoma, who, if you had any idea mm-hmm. who she was and what she did, along with Clara Luper, mm-hmm. you'd bow down and say, wow, I didn't know she existed. We beat up Congress. We beat up Congress so bad that they said, okay, listen, we respect what you guys did. And we came up with the zero legislation. If you look at the deal on there, you will hear these congressmen complain because they didn't get a chance to add in their 2 cents. They didn't get a chance to debate or discuss it because that wasn't the tactic. The Constitution is a tool to be used for you. It's ubiquitous. It doesn't say African. It doesn't say black. It doesn't say color. It doesn't say any of that throughout any one of those documents. But they will lend you the thing you believe that it does, and therefore you can't utilize it. Juneteenth is a perfect example of that. It was not something that went down easily, but yet there was 100 staffers on the Hill who said, man, Steve, you really worked that situation. And I learned that from Dr. Myers, right, who, if you spend some time and understand where he was, he could have been anywhere. But he decided to go to Tula, Mississippi, the poorest place in this country, push Juneteenth, and work against all these things that are going against it that we're talking about. I'm not, you know, my grandpa was a reparationist, and he was a good man at it, and I have my ups and downs with that whole institution. But I do know one thing, the Constitution and the constitutional powers can be welded in our favor. Number two, my family is from Oklahoma. Dr. Dorsey Little is the premier expert on that treaty, the Treaty of 18, which America did pay reparations to those Indian nations, in the tune of a little bit over $500,000 then when they signed that treaty, right? And that's what we call the Oklahoma Juneteenth, and we made Congress aware of that and its influence and the right to be have an interest in the land. So I know that document very well. We call it, that is actually the last people freed in America were in the Oklahoma territories. And if you want to know, they were the first people freed on June 19, 1862 in the Oklahoma territories. I see a lot of people copy that from our research that we did. That's what we used to beat up Congress. We told them what they did and what they didn't do. It was a lot of education and a lot of work, right, by a group of people who were dedicated to make sure that America acknowledged the end of slavery. That's just the first part of getting it done, okay? Sure, there's a lot to it. And sure, our flag is red, white, and blue. And sure, it talks about the guiding star of freedom and the bursting star of freedom and the new horizon. And it reminds us that the blood of America, that the blood of our ancestors covered all the ground of America. It is there. And now our flags are produced in the Marcus Garvey Flag Company in Philadelphia, and they understand the meaning of it, right? So, and you've got to understand that when you're talking about Oklahoma, you're talking about black people that were here before Christopher Columbus got here, in the Creeks, and many of those tribes who are black people were here long before the Africans got here because there were Africans who traveled here. And that history is there, which you're not aware about. So there's a lot of things going on here that we have to do. The one thing I have to say to anybody when they do that is say, the word of God says, study to show thyself approved, a workman of God who need not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. And that's what we have to do here continuously in America. And that's what the Juneteenth Foundation has done. That's why we changed the narrative of Juneteenth. Granger didn't stand on anything. He didn't stand on the balcony and do anything. It was actually Major Emory who took and executed the order. Look at General Order Number 3. It says issued by Granger, signed by Emory. If you're in the military, you know what that means. So we researched the story behind that in Galveston and how it came about. One of our guys, Sam Collins, is down there. My great-grandfather, my kid's grandfather, was born on Galveston. His family's down there. So we've been down there and researched it. So it's a lot of work in America to do. But Juneteenth is not shallow. And the American government, if you research, didn't really want to get it done, but they were pressured into it. I'll say this last thing. Usually legislation goes from the House of Representatives to the Senate and then to the President's desk. That did not happen this time because we kept running into ways, committees, and rules committees and everything else in the House. So understanding the process, we started in the Senate, and we got 100% Senate approval. And we wrote a bill and sent it in such a way where the House did not have a chance to object it, to debate about it. All they had to do was vote on it because it was called. And if you look, they complained, but they voted anyway because they didn't want to be out against their senators. Only a handful rebelled. And Joe Biden, who I've known since 2008, and I had a good conversation with him, said, if it gets here, it is fine. Like the last three presidents said, if it gets here, it is fine. So it took some work. It took some strategy. It took some walking. It took some talking. It took people behind the scenes and in front of the scenes to make sure that America acknowledged it. And I will say this, it's not over yet. In 4 years, we have to go back and add findings and get it across. We got it across the goal line. In 4 years, we got to go back and amend the legislation and put some more meat to it. So it's not a battle that's over. It's a political process. And I'll put that up against anybody that's there. Thank you very much. All things Juneteenth.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Steve. We are winding down. Seems like it really went fast tonight. But we want to come back to Dr. Moncrief and all that you heard. And we talked about so much, you know, from addictions. And the one thing that I have a passion for is, you know, alcohol recovery. And, you know, I've seen so much through the years. And particularly, as I said earlier, after the death of my nephews, you know, I can't even tell you. And even within the last 12 months, after tragically losing a brother that we all tried to save, you know, at the hands of the medical system, we've had new, you know, a resurgence of, you know, alcohol in the family, and you know, and increase, you know, people who don't drink have started to drinking. It's that mental that stress, and then with the COVID-19, and then being, you know, not being able to be with one another as much, you know, before the alone, and, you know, turn to alcohol. It's so, so very serious. And, you know, we do have in our family, and those that have been extremely sick, you know, with the alcoholism, you know, with the abuse, I don't know what you call it, you know, it's a sickness. I mean, it's a real sickness. And and people have died in my family, and there are people who are very, very sick or suffering physical ailments, and added mental illnesses, particularly since the loss of our double homicide in 1997. So, you know, I just want to say I appreciate you all. Love you all so much. And I appreciate the conversation tonight. We're here to make changes intentionally. You know, we're going to revolutionize, or we are right now, those of us who are here, and God has given us one another. I truly believe that we, of people of like minds, we can make things happen. I've been in positions, you know, where I have been the strategist, the planner, the writer, the developer. You know, I've been the one who has been the collaboration organizer. I've been the one who developed systems that are still yet in place today, where you can dial up a ride. I created that along with the visionary. We wrote that many years ago, and that started in the state of Michigan. The Wilbur Brown was the visionary behind that. I wrote the business plan and the grant application in order to get that dollarized vision that he had. And right now, today, the Department of Transportation in Barron County, Michigan, bears his name. Dr. Mary Lee is behind that. So I'm saying that to let you all know, not just that, but recovery centers, state-of-the-art recovery centers for alcohol and drugs I helped to create and write the business plans and help get funding for these state-of-the-art alcohol and recovery drug centers where they go and their residents. I mean, they're absolutely beautiful on acres of land. They can afford it, but insurances pay for it too. We don't have anything like that. They throw our people into programs where, you know, two grown men, adult men, have to share a 10-by-10 almost bedroom. And so how are you going to recover in these type of situations? They take the money that is meant for our community and do these stupid things, you know, I mean, just demeaning. To me, it is so demeaning what they do, and then they take this money and build, you know, these state-of-the-art, you know, types of farms for them to recover. So that's one thing we really want to do. We are working on it and planning. You know, we're going to do our own recovery, mental health recovery centers, residential. So Dr. Moncrief, and then we're going to come back around to all of you. So don't go anywhere. Dr. Moncrief.
Yes. I feel like, you know, I just finished looking at one of those Batman episodes where, you know, things are just wow. The things that our young black entrepreneurs are doing, not just opening businesses, but foundations in support of the, mm-hmm. of their businesses or as a result of their businesses. That's wonderful. There's no way you can fail. The first young lady who was on who talked about restarting and reinventing herself, and she's doing all these other things. Dr. Mary Lee, that just shows how important the work that you're doing to inspire young entrepreneurs and how important the work is that they're doing just by stepping out on their own, stepping out on faith, and opening their own businesses, not being afraid of failure, but in search of success. And I think that's what our young people and our more our people who aren't as young need to be able to do. There's opening a black business in a black neighborhood or any kind of neighborhood. It puts us one up. I can remember my uncle, you know, owning a gas station when I was a child, and my brothers and I running out and taking turns pumping gas in people's cars, and you know mm-hmm. how nice the people were to see us and everything. You know, all this now that people pumping their own gas, back then, you know, that's the way people made a living, servicing people. And that was back in the day, you know, owning a business. So why can't we own businesses today? Now we have, what, two black gas stations in the whole city of Detroit. You know, that it's just amazing to me how not forward we've gone economically, but backwards that we've gone in terms of opening businesses. So having think tanks, having programs like this is inspiring to me. And when we support our own businesses, that's how we make our businesses successful. That's how the black communities came and grew and were involved in all aspects of businesses when we weren't allowed to be in white communities. And we need to come back to that mentality of we can do it, we can support each other, we can step over or drive an extra couple of miles to service these black businesses. And just to end my comments for tonight, substance abuse is a disease. Alcoholism, drug abuse, those are diseases. We get caught up in the ideal that these people are doing something to themselves, that we deserve to turn our backs on them, when actuality, these people have gotten caught up into something that they hadn't planned on getting caught up into, and without help, they will not get out of. And we need to have programs in our communities to support support our people, you know, going in, getting the proper treatment. And once you have an addiction, it's like having high blood pressures, like having diabetes. Once you have these diseases, you always have these diseases. And once you got hypertension, you always have hypertension. But you can get the hypertension under control with the right medication, okay, and the right lifestyle changes. And it's the same thing with substance abuse. You can once you are an alcoholic, or once you are addicted to a substance, you always are an alcoholic or a addicted person. But what happens is you can get treatment so that your body no longer requires those substances, and you can make your way out of it. But you're always running the danger of slipping back into it. It's lifelong. And so we need programs not just to help people over the acute episode, but we need programs and support chronically for the rest of their lives. We need to be supportive. And that's what, you know, I want us to think about. We can, those are my comments, Dr. Marilee, for tonight.
Thank you. And we'll plan a show. We want to plan a show around, you know, this disease, you know, because one thing that people deny, they're, you know, live in denial that they're, that they have this disease. And in denial, you'll never be helped. So we want to address this, you know, from the psychological and medical points of view. He's not here. He informed us earlier that he wouldn't be here tonight, and also Dr. Cannon. So I do want to extend my appreciation, you know, to both of them. You know, they're not here tonight, so let's just, you know, keep them in our hearts and prayers with whatever they are working on. But they weren't able to be here tonight. And so he's completely aware. We've talked today, and so he's completely aware of the situation, and we will you know, we're going to bring this topic back, you know, when he comes back. And but yeah, you know, there's so much denial. There's so much where, you know, people don't really, really understand, you know, what's going on, you know, with them. And, you know, I occasionally late night calls, you know, from various family members, I always pick up the phone. You know, a lot of people, and I've been this way for as long as I can remember, you know, we have the troubled hearts and the troubled minds. And, you know, the many young people now we're dealing with the marijuana. I mean, we have, but now that it's legal, you know, it's more, it has intensified. And so, you know, I get late night phone calls, middle of the night, because people know they can always call Aunt Mary. You can call Aunt Mary 24 hours a day. And I'm going to pick up the phone, you know, and I get, you know, on the other end of the phone, and it's so sad. You know, nephews, you know, more so than nieces, but both, you know, they come on 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, Aunt Mary, they're crying. They, you know how, you know, you've seen people who are highly intoxicated, they'll sing, they'll cry, they'll talk a little bit. You know, I get this from a number of nephews. Yeah.
Dr. Lee, from as a person who actually treats substance abuse, particularly alcoholism, you know, mainly I use a medicine called Vivitrol. It's a once a month injection. It helps it. But the underlying issue of all the substance abuse that I treat, the crack, the cocaine, the alcohol, the marijuana, the meth, and the mollies, et cetera, all drugs are used to get away from something, whether it's get away from disease, to get away from illness, to get away from hurt, pain. And my ministry is a ministry that's based on people who are alcoholics, people who are crackheads, et cetera. And they have a hurt. So, yeah, they kind of semi-deny the problem, but they have to use that to help shut down or repress a memory. And the thing that the Scientology group and even Minister Farrakhan work with them is that they go into there to get to that hurt and to release them from the hurt to break that addiction or that cycle or that psychological emotional pain. So the number one underestimated pain issue that a lot of young people, older people deal with is the self-esteem issue of being mistreated, being black, feeling powerless, feeling like nobody. As you pointed out, as a male, some, you know, not as much as a female, but we are now in a situation where, like alcohol before, that once it put labels on it, it was allowed to be sold in the stores before the prohibition against it, same thing, cigarettes. Now, marijuana is to have people away from stuff. But each drug has always allowed economic disenfranchisement. So blacks lost neighborhoods, even though the drugs, alcohol increased and became legal. But you're not finding your black Harlem anymore. You're not finding your black black bottom like in your Detroit. You have, like in Benton Harbor, where now we're losing gentrification. Now has weed to have people with apathy in terms of not trying to fight to hold on to land or property, those type of things. And the youth, when you interview them, that they have low self-esteem, that they have hurt pain, they don't understand and that the adults haven't treated that. And so you try to use drugs and alcohol to try to help you cope and deal with life. And one of the things that we have to look at is what we did since the 70s, that we stopped talking to our children, that we stopped building our children up with the pro-black self-esteem. There are some, you know, outliers who did that, but we're talking about as a race, as a group. You know, the Juneteenth is important, but we haven't talked that black pride since the 70s. We haven't talked that my brother, my sister, you know, since the 70s. We have let that die. And in the process, people had to turn to alcohol, to drugs, to find some value, some self-worth, or to remove it from pain. And when, you know, in between a drink session of an alcoholic, you can find out what that pain is. So it's, you know, and not so a denial. And I had a gentleman, and he told me, point blank, when we went to address that issue, that hurt from so long ago, he told me he thought he was ready, but he said if he gave up that, he wouldn't know how to function. That's what he told me. So holding on to that 50-year hurt, that thing that hurt him as a child, that whatever happened to him, that has become a part of him. And so we have to look at these people and understand that that the help has to come from us, because the response to dealing with hurt was to shut down mental hospitals in the state of Michigan under the former Governor Engler. So, and then I had a patient, and I'm going to get off, had a patient who's schizophrenic who was basically asking for help. He was in a psychotic episode. I sent them to the psychiatric clinic. The psychiatric clinic called me scared of him because he was threatening them instead of admitting them to the hospital. He did go to the hospital. The hospital blew him off and discharged him, even though they know he was psychotic. He went back again. The police called me because I'm a jail chaplain and talking with the nurse. And what it came out was the implicit bias that, yes, he's black crazy, but that's, you know, black people are basically crazy, so he doesn't warrant admission. But if he was white and crazy, he would warrant admission. So, you know, I had to look at that particular issue, the racism in terms of treating black mental health. And that just happened last week. And the final thing is that I'm leading the campaign because the CEOs who are managing medicine made $4.5 billion last year, $4.5 billion. And as of July, everyone on this phone was listening. The insurance companies now want to have it that if you see a heart doctor and you're having chest pain and the heart doctor goes in and finds that you have a narrow spot, the insurance companies now want that doctor not to do anything unless you agree to pay for the stent. So they want to separate it out. They want the normal procedure to go in there and place a stent to open up so your blood flow will go to your heart. The insurance companies want to make money, charge the person. So you have to pay an additional fee if you have a heart attack for the person to fix your heart attack. The stomach doctors now are told that they can go in and look, and if they see that you have a cancer or a polyp in your colon, they want you to pay a deposit ahead of time to remove the cancer or the polyp, so the insurance company doesn't have to pay for it anymore. Now the patient is getting treated for breast cancer. They want the insurance companies want the patient to pay to get the labs to be tested before you can get your chemo. And without the lab test, you can't get your chemo. But the insurance companies want the patient to pay for that now. And now I just was contacted yesterday that the orthopedic bone surgeon has to now talk doctor to doctor, peer review to several doctors to argue with them to be a, so he can go ahead and do a surgery to fix something so that the insurance company CEOs can make more profit. So we have to really pay attention to how we're being attacked on all fronts. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. We are wrapping it up. So we're going to ask, we want our guests, because we don't keep we want our guests to come on and give your final thoughts and remarks. And so we'll have Toya, are you still here? You can give your final thoughts and remarks. And then Dominique and Michael and Glenn, if you all still here, want to hear from you. And then we're going to have Jared to you know, once everyone's done. Okay. Toya?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. We wrapping it up, your final thoughts and comments. It'd be appreciated.
Well, thank you for having me. I thought this interview is very informational, and I'm glad to be a part of the team and part of the group. I'm looking forward to what we're all going to build together. I look forward to working with you all.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Michael?
Yes, ma'am. I'm here. And, of course, again, I'm continually honored and humbled to be part of this, and these important conversations. Let's continue to talk in every facet and every meeting we can, so that this conversation continue to grow and make people think and make people question what doesn't look right and what they feel inside isn't right. Black media is important. We have to control the narrative. We have to make sure that the truth is told. My group, we're focused on doing that, and want to assist everyone that we can in doing the same thing. Bless you.
And thank you, and bless you. Dominique?
Wow. I'm just right now I'm blown away by all the information and dialogue and great banter that's going, you know, back and forth with all the people in Congress and Capitol Hill and the doctors and so on and so forth. So for me, you know, I'm just listening and formulating, you know, ideas, you know, that, you know, I'd like to do, you know, with different ones, you know, on this call. Like, for example, the gentleman was talking about Juneteenth. I'd like to do like a, you know, like a parade perhaps, you know, one day, you know, for that, you know, for that, you know, for that event or for that, you know, holiday, right? You all talk about, you know, alcohol abuse and drug abuse and, you know, I would like to, you know, on the app, on Liveways, you know, have, you know, seminars and bring awareness and, you know, have live panel discussions about these things. So, you know, that way some of the things that, you know, you have, you know, within your skill set and, you know, with your, you know, your degrees and your experience and your positions, you'll be able to, you know, take that and use that and share light, you know, so that way we can help mitigate and resolve some of these problems that's regarding drug abuse and things like that. You know, my stepfather, you know, he was, he died out there. You know, he was strung out really, really bad. I can recall, you know, being a 12-year-old boy, me and my mom, you know, we would go out in the streets and try to look for him and, you know, take him, you know, food and things like that. And, you know, I can recall, you know, vividly those nights, you know, and he would, you know, come home and, you know, steal TVs. And that's what the neighborhood I grew up in was, you know, was crack ridden, you know. So I saw those things coming up. And so I'm just, you know, eager just to, you know, be a big part of this team and you know, bringing these issues, you know, on the forefront, on the front end and the back end, you know, where we can, you know, get people the help that they need, you know. So I'm just excited. I don't know what else I could say. Right now my wheels are turning. My mind is going. I love it. I love it. I'm excited. Dr. Mary, as always, I thank God for you and this platform, and I thank God for all the, you know, my answers on here, you know, all the entrepreneurs, all the business owners, you know, and so on and so forth. So I'm ready. I'm eager. I could talk all night about this stuff. So thank you all.
And thank you. We appreciate you. And we definitely love, you know, what you're doing. So excited, everybody. Just so excited and thankful for, you know, the power of God and the creation, the Creator on bringing us to where we are today. There is no stopping us. There is absolutely no stopping us. And regardless as to, you know, the pain, the brokenness, you know, what we go through, said earlier, today was an extremely difficult day. But we, by the grace of the Almighty, we got through it. And we got some work done. And we were able to, you know, let it out. And I appreciate you all. Let's see here. Anybody? Have I missed anybody here? Alexis?
Dr. Lee?
Yeah.
Dr. Lee?
Is Jared?
Yes. The man, yes. who was speaking about wanting to do Juneteenth, a parade, please reach out,
yes,
to me. We do Juneteenth in all 50 states, the largest Juneteenth in the country, are members of the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation, from Alaska to Florida.
You know I got
Florida.
You. You know I got you.
Yeah.
You know we got
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah. Tell them to contact me. We will help him get going. Let him know what state he's in. I mean, we're there in Michigan. The vast, matter of fact, the first federal legislation for Juneteenth came out of Michigan with Wilbur Bridges Galloway. So that was the first federal.
Okay.
They didn't get passed until Mississippi with Trent Lott. But, yeah, so if you're there in New York, whatever state you're in, you've got Juneteenth people everywhere.
Yeah.
So just email me.
And so we're going to be all doing this together, Steve, from state to state to state, and, you know, with Neighborhood Commerce. And so we that's what we're here for, and but yes, we will connect you and we will have a conversation, you know, together as we work through and plan. It is phenomenal, you know, it is coming together in a very phenomenal way, and you know we're going to be able to be everywhere at one time pretty soon. So absolutely, absolutely, yes. And that is Dominique, you know, from the Live Ways, who is, you know, we're going to be working very, very closely together. And so we'll have a conversation about, you know, bring this vision together. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Let's see here. Who is 1242? Last digit 1242. I just want to be sure I don't miss anybody. Is there anybody out there other than Jared who has spoken but have not done your wrap up yet? Just speak out. And we want to thank our listening audience. This, again, the YouTube Merely Live, the Dr. Merely Live Show channel and the Neighborhood Commerce Institute channel now have been equipped or are loaded up with all of our shows. And soon we're going to have them all transcribed and where you can get them in written form. So now we're going to go to our announcer, Jared.
Amen. Thank you, Dr. Lee, and to all the guests and everyone who participated. It's always a humbling experience and motivating as well. I really, really appreciate you all. Thank you so much. I mean, this platform is what it is, but it's more than what it is because of the participation and the contribution, in my opinion. right? Something that's been coming to mind is really just a simple statement that we all know, but it continues to come back to us with a new inspiration every time you think of it, and that is free your mind. Free your mind, and the world is available to you. We as Black people have been so indoctrinated that our mind is prisoner, right? And for a great many of us, it hurts those of us who are out trying to do something to continually run into that recidivism, right? There's this thing where that control is there, and it's so powerful that it keeps us locked in things that are not good for us, akin to the idea of being addicted to something, akin to the ideas of being stuck and motionless and hopeless and helpless. We are not those things. We convince ourselves to be those things. It's not until we come across something that we allow to inspire us. Remember, love does not demand, it asks. You have to be open to that ask, allowing yourself to be inspired. And sometimes, for some of us, it takes us to that dark, dark place we spend a lot of time and effort to try to avoid. However, comma, you cannot clean the house if you avoid the dirty corners. Those dirty corners exist for us all. And it's not until we work with one another that we find a commonality which tells us that we're not alone in that hurt. It's not until we allow God to fill us, when we allow for the good nature and that spirit to change the way we've been to ourselves, that we come across the understanding that things can get better. Hope is not free. Hope is not a given. Hope is earned. And for some of us, it's earned more diligently than many of us. It's not until we understand the value of things that we start to understand the necessity and the importance, and we have that drive, and we have those things that continue to recommit us to changing something. If we change that something, then we can move on to change that next thing. And along the way, we will pick up people who will walk with us, who will get us to that place to help pick us up when the journey is too much. It's difficult to understand some of these things as an isolated person stuck and wallowing in things that hurt. But hurt is not, you're not a monopoly on hurt. Hurt happens to us all. But healing is a call that comes to us all. If we ignore that, when we're choosing not to participate, we're choosing not to be a part. But when we accept that and we allow for that vulnerability and to revisit those things that we've conquered, then sometimes you can actually make a difference. I had an older woman a long, long time ago back in Mobile, Alabama, tell me something that it really stuck with me. And that is, sometimes the things you go through are not about you. Sometimes it's about the person who's watching you so that they can learn what victory looks like. Can't give ourselves credit all the times for the things that we survive, because if we did that, all we'd be doing is talking about ourselves. We wouldn't actually be accomplishing anything. But sometimes when we come over those things that happen in quiet, there's somebody else who's watching you achieve that victory. Even when you lose, the fact that you were standing there proud is something that is an inspiration to somebody else. God does not make mistakes. He does not move foolishly. We do. But when we understand to allow God's Spirit to work, we cannot fail. We cannot lose. I've been inspired in hearing all of these things that we've heard tonight, and there's a spirit in it. And I'm so blessed to see this multifaceted group of people that have come together to show perspective in the idea that you can have something that you love that nobody else understands. And if you take that something and you make that something a beautiful something that works to help somebody else, well, hey, that's value. And that value can then be turned into profit. But profit doesn't need to be the very first thing you think about. What you need to think about is being the expert at that thing that other people be inspired about. because those are the things that are going to get you through that tough, quiet time when you're sitting there with your own head in your hands. But it's not wasted effort. The beautiful thing about us is that we are indomitable. We've been subjected to so many things that are designed to try to break us, but we've never been broken. Never been broken. There's always the next generation who's born, who has those inspirations and comes back to the calling that we knew from before. We choose to forget things. We choose to forget our power. We choose to forget the people that we are. We need to break that cycle. We need to stop being recidivist and going back into that prison of our mind. Free your mind.
Okay.
God
all
bless
right.
you all.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All
Have
right.
a wonderful night.
All right. We appreciate you. We love you all. God bless you. This is Dr. Mary Lee. Stay safe and well. Until next time. Good night.
Good night.